Cape Talk. Inspiration Wednesdays.
Well, talking of big brains, it's such a pleasure today to meet the man whose book had me so inspired when I read it a couple of weeks ago. It's the tale of a young man who simply would not accept the limitations that apartheid South Africa wanted to place on him. And his determination to succeed took him all the way from Mitchell's Plain to some of the world's top universities and to success in the business world. Only to have him turn his back on all of that, turn his back on the riches, come home and found a non-profit organization that is all about literacy and reading and giving children access to books. Now, he's with us fresh off the plane on a break from his current studies at Oxford University, the author of Pushing Boulders and founder of Read to Rise. Athol Williams, it's wonderful to finally have you with us in studio. And I must say congratulations on being named our Lead Essay Hero for the month of January.
Thank you so much, Pippa. It's wonderful being here.
We actually, if the name sounds familiar, Read to Rise, it's because we spoke to Athol's brother Roscoe over a year ago. Roscoe Williams and Read to Rise were recognized by Lead Essay, and we're going to find out what has happened in the year and a half since then. But first, more on Athol's personal story, which is really the reason he's here today. You've been educated at the best of the best, Athol. You've studied at Harvard, at MIT, London Business School, the London School of Economics, Oxford as we speak. Let's not forget my own alma mater, Wits, is on the list as well. But the thing that really struck me about your story is how close it was, how easily it could have been a very different story, because the name is Pushing Boulders, and there were so many boulders placed in your path that had to be pushed out the way. There are many people who would have given up. Tell us a little bit about what made you different. What made you decide to keep on pushing?
I think it was a big part of it, Pepper, was this idea that I had a dream, and I try to hold onto the dream as closely as I could. I think as a teenage boy, while my friends were possibly dreaming of playing for their favorite soccer team or playing for the, you know, joining the band, which is absolutely fine, I was dreaming of going to some of the best universities in the world. I was dreaming of being educated. I loved reading. I loved learning. My parents instilled in us the drive to learn. Mm. And so there were two things combined. One was this idea of education, and I understood very early on that education was going to be a powerful drive in my life. But secondly was this dream, this childish dream that said, you know, I'm going to go to the best. If I'm going to play soccer, let me play for Real Madrid or Barcelona. But if I'm going to go to universities, let me go to the best in the world.
Mm. Now, those were big dreams for a boy to have in Mitchell's Plain at that time, because, of course, you were in the midst of the apartheid era. It was a society that was structured to prevent you achieving that kind of thing. And you were trying to finish your high school studies in the midst of massive student protests.
Exactly. It was the mid-80s, 85, 86 was exactly when the uprisings then went into the high schools. In grade 10, half of the year, we had no school. Mm. And so I had to literally teach myself a lot of the subjects. And then in grade 11, the year later, there was no higher grade maths. No higher grade physics, right? And I knew I needed physical science and higher grade to get into Wits to do engineering. Mm. And so again, I had to teach myself. And I, you know, as I write in the book, I went to school by day. By night, I went to night school. So at our school, we had lessons for working adults.
Yeah.
So I'd come home in the afternoon, have lunch, do my homework, then go back to school and do night school. Every week I'd go to extra lessons. Every holiday I'd go for extra lessons where I could find it. My parents didn't buy me anything other than extra books. Mm. That's all I tried to do was get as many of the textbooks as I could. And so I just drove. I was self-driven in that respect. That became my mission to make sure I got through high school.
And you really stretched yourself. I mean, you describe in the book how you wanted to find not just the past papers for your matric that you were going to write, but the one that the white pupils,
yes,
which you knew was a completely different standard.
It's exactly.
How did you manage to do that?
That was actually, I must give my dad credit there, because we suddenly caught into this idea. And my dad understood that the education system was driven by race group. And so we sort of just said, logically, the white education system would be better than ours. If we can get the textbooks the white kids are using, that's going to be fantastic.
Mm.
And my dad worked in Salt River for a clothing company in the textile industry. And his boss had a son. And his boss was white, and his boss had a son a year older than me. And so we just got the books from his son. And I then studied those books as well, on top of everything else. And even with all of that effort, I still didn't get the straight distinctions because I was up against such a massive challenge, but managed to get through enough to get into Wits and to get a scholarship to go to Wits.
And you got there. You must have felt so proud of yourself to be standing there, tick number one on the list of ambitions that I hope to achieve in life. It didn't all go so smoothly there. And after graduating successfully, what was waiting for you in the workplace was not what you had expected.
It's exactly right, Pippa. I think, and there's another boulder to have pushed, right? And I think what's interesting about boulders is at some point you decide whether I'm going to keep pushing or do I abandon that idea. And I think the only reason you keep pushing that boulder is if you believe in the dream on the other end of that boulder. So your life isn't about the boulder. Life's about the dream on the other end of the boulder. But often we've got to endure pushing that boulder to get to that dream. Mm. And I started working as one of the first black engineers in the country. Got posted out to a part of the country where they'd never seen a professional black person before. Mm. And didn't know what to do with me. And, you know, the world was very simple in those days, right? You know, all the white people were in the offices and all the black people were on the factory floor. And here an engineer came who was meant to be in the offices, but we couldn't put him in the offices. And we couldn't put him in the factory floor because he was an engineer. So they put me in a Zozo hut, one of these prefabricated plastic huts in the car park, and said, well, we're putting you in neither of the places we think you should go. And they stuck me there.
It is the most extraordinary story to read. And you sort of read that and thinking, only in South Africa could this have happened, that somebody is qualified, they've invested in your studies, given you a bursary to become an engineer, and then decided that the most practical thing to do with you at the end of that process is put you in a hut doing nothing for months on end.
And just the frustration I endured. I mean, I talk in the book about it at some point, kind of just putting my foot down flat on my accelerator, hoping I'd hit a truck or hit a wall. Mm. It was that frustrating. I started developing an ulcer, early stage of an ulcer at the age of 23. I was that frustrated because I wanted to get on and do stuff.
Now, speaking of getting on and doing stuff, April 1994, you sit down and you write down a list of your dreams and your ambitions. And it's a long list. And some of the things on it were things like publishing my own poetry. I want to run a successful business. There was a dream to see Bruce Springsteen in concert and a dream to get a PhD. Education was always there. And I believe by then already you had your sights set on the more distant goal. Okay, so the initial experience of studying at Wits, I've achieved, I've graduated. It's taken me nowhere. Let's go back to that dream of studying overseas. You had MIT in your sights. How did you get there, Ethel?
I as an engineer, I guess you always know about the Massachusetts Institute of Technology as the place to go in the world. And so I'd always had this dream of going. I had a dream of going to two universities, MIT and Oxford. Mm-hmm. And Oxford comes later in the story. but for that point, I was dreaming of MIT. It was ranked as the top technology university in the world and the top university overall in the world. I wanted to go to the business school. And so part of my frustration in South Africa was I was an engineer. I was going to go nowhere with my career year. I needed to leave the country. And I figured, let me branch out into business. It'll give me a broader scope in terms of career. And so I set my sights on MIT. I thought, again, let me go for the best university I can. And I applied to go to MIT and got in. But of course, I had no money to pay for it. Mm. I then applied for a scholarship. And I was awarded the scholarship, but the scholarship specified which university I could go to, and it wasn't MIT, right? And I talk about in the book about the idea of boulder. Sometimes there's a boulder you choose to push, because I came to a fork. And on the one end, I could go to a low-ranked university, but fully paid, or go to the university of my dreams without any money. And I decided to go to MIT without any money, and literally arrived in Boston, homeless, not knowing a single person, out money for fees, out money for food, nowhere to live.
And I'm not going to give too much away about what happened next, because we do want our listeners to read the book and find it out for themselves. But suffice to say, you made a go of it. You made a success of your studies. You ended up working for a top consulting firm. It took you internationally. It took you to working in London, living the life of a high flyer. And at some point, Ethel, clearly you looked at your lifestyle, you looked at the luxury you lived in, and something just didn't sit right with you. I know the death of your father had a profound impact on you.
Yes.
Were the two linked?
They were linked. What my father died, what struck me was this discontinuity between the life of my family back home and the life of South Africa back home and the life I was living. Mm. And I was living the high life. You know, when I traveled first class around the world. I had a driver come and fetch me at home. This was all at the age of 28. Mm. And that discontinuity wasn't me. For a while, I kind of played in this different world and it was fun, but I very quickly realized that that was not me. And, you know, I was struck by the words of Nelson Mandela, where he said that to be free is not merely to cast off your own chains, but to live in a way that enhances and respects the freedom of others. And I paraphrase that to mean, well, until everyone else around me is free or enjoying some measure of freedom and good life prospects, I wasn't free. And it really struck me at some point of saying, well, I can't live this life, and I'm looking around and seeing people with deprivation. Mm. And I wanted to do something to change that.
So part of that something was leaving the UK, leaving the corporate world, coming home, initially founding your own successful business, which you grew here in South Africa. But even then, you had it all, Ethel. You had the big house. You had your own private library. The photographs of your library made my mouth water looking at them. Rare book collections, a lovely wife at your side. You had everything going for you, and still you felt this need to turn your back on that and rather find a new venture and a new boulder to start pushing.
Right.
Now, that brings us to the founding of Read to Rise. And as I mentioned to the audience at the start of the interview, more than a year ago, we chatted to Lead to Rise. They were recognized by the Lead SA Hero, and I chatted to Roscoe Williams, Athol's brother, about his role there. For the sake of those who missed that show, Athol, you decided to found a nonprofit organization that was going to give children access to books.
Right.
How did you go about it?
It started very simply. It started literally with our hearing about children in Mitchell's Plain, Soweto, and elsewhere who had never owned a book. Now, even though I grew up in Mitchell's Plain under very similar circumstances, there were always books in our home. You know, I had encyclopedias lying around, and my dad read novels, and so there were always books around. Mm. I could not conceive of this idea of a child growing up in a home without any books. And, you know, I'm no fantastic educator, but I do know that until a child's got a book in their hand, they can never learn to read. And we've got this massive literacy problem in the country, massive education problem. And so for me, it was inconceivable that I could continue saying this is a free country when children don't have access to books. Mm. And so we thought, let's start with that. And I'd initially wrote one story. So I'm not a children's book writer, but I thought, let me write a book. Because I was shocked at the quality of the books that our children were getting, Pepper. You know, the content. There were stereotypes around gender, around race and violence in those books. And so I wrote the book, got my wife to illustrate the book. And we just thought, we printed 40 at first and went to a classroom, and the children loved this book so much that we then started to expand it more and more, to the point now where we've distributed this book to 50,000 children. You know, and we're very, very serious about giving brand new books. These are not hand-me-downs. Brand new book, highest quality book. It costs just 45 rand to sponsor a book, and which is cheaper than you can get anywhere in any bookstore. But, you know, the key thing is our name says it all, because it says Read to Rise. And often it's about reading and literacy, but it's also about the rise. Because the rise is about inspiring children. And I don't know that from my own personal experience, because you asked at the beginning, you know, how did I go about doing all those things? But part of it was I was inspired to learn. And I think that's where we can really help our young children, to inspiring them to learn. Even if I can't give them all the books they need, I can inspire them to want to go and find it for themselves.
You know, I've never forgotten Roscoe's statement when I chatted to him in 2015 about the look on a child's face when they are holding that book and they open it up and there's a space in the front of the book for them to write their name in. And he said to me, and a child looked up at me and said, "But whose book is this?" And he said, "It's yours." And the look of wonder on this child's face of realizing that this is my book to keep and I will own it and look after it from here on. It gave me goosebumps and it still does today.
It's something special, something absolutely. And I underestimated that. I didn't really fully appreciate it until I saw it myself as well. Where the child's, you know, reluctant to write in it, they kind of want to give it back to us at the end of the session. We said, "No, it's yours. Take it home with you.
And read it again. And
read it again." Exactly.
And you just said to me while we were chatting earlier that they bring those copies to school. They're in the dog-eared, much-loved, much-read copy carried around in the school bag.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's one of the most hopeful things we can do. Is both give the child a book, because it changes their view of education. It's about reading for pleasure, which is our big drive.
Now, you've grown substantially since I chatted to Roscoe in 2015.
Yes.
I know you're not just Cape Town based anymore. You're up in Gauteng as well and growing further.
Yeah, well, so we opened Operation Soweto. So we serve the Soweto community. An amazing team we've got there. And just later this year, we're going to be opening an operation in Limpopo province. So, you know, our approach is community by community. We're not a fly by night. And as I was saying, you know, we focus on grade twos and threes, and every year there's a new crop of grade twos and threes. So when we commit to a community, it's into perpetuity, essentially. And so we've been very disciplined about how we're growing. A lot of NGOs sort of disappear after a year or two.
You're in it for the long haul.
No, we are absolutely in for the long haul.
Athol, let's go back to that 1994 list of goals and ambitions. Somebody's SMS asking, did you ever get to see Bruce Springsteen?
Five times, yes.
Okay. Another thing that was on that list was the ambition to be president of South Africa one day. Have you ever held on to that? Political ambitions?
You know, childish dreams we have, right? I've committed myself to public service. And that's all the work I do, the writing I do, everything's around public service. And so I want to see South Africa grow. I've got great hope in our country. I think we've got major fractures, but also I think we can address those. And I'm not necessarily driving towards a political career. I think if at some point it makes sense, I'll do that. But right now I'm focusing on making a real sincere impact in society and in our communities where I can.
Well, I'll make two comments. One is that we're hearing a budget at 2 o'clock that I would wish to hear the scrapping of VAT on books so that would make your life easier and access to books easier. The second is, Athol, we need more people like you in public service. There is, shall we say, a vacuum of the kind of integrity and morality and leadership, by example, you've been describing to us. So I hope you won't cross it off the list too fast. That's all I'm saying. We are out of time. Athol, I want our listeners firstly to go and get a copy of Pushing Boulders and read it for themselves. It is the most inspiring thing you will read this year. It's I know the website pushingboulders.org has links to the Kindle version.
Yeah.
It's also available in all the major bookstores.
All the major bookstores, yes.
Okay. And then secondly, if you'd like to hear more of Athol's story and perhaps in more detail than time allows today, you are giving a talk tomorrow evening in Pinelands.
I am, yes, at Nasniv, Sasniv, in Pinelands tomorrow at 6:30. It's free, so come along and just kind of hear the story.
So if you'd like to hear more, please do go down to Sasniv in Pinelands tomorrow at 6:30. Let's close with a shout-out for Athol that comes over the WhatsApp line from Simon at Mousehand, saying, for Athol or to A.E. Balakistan, as you called yourself when you first self-published, saying, well done, Athol, on your success. That's echoed by all of us here. Athol, thank you for the book, and thank you for all that you're doing through Read to Rise for the children in Cape Town and beyond. We hope it is a success story that continues to grow.
Great. Thanks, Pippa.
Athol Williams, the author of Pushing Boulders.